Riviera Radio. Business.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You all right today?
Very good, thank you.
You'll be looking forward to 5:30 this afternoon, won't you, honestly?
Why?
Hey?
Why?
Bosses of biggest companies will earn more in the first 3 days of this week than the average worker's annual wage. By 17:30 GMT this afternoon, the pay of chiefs will have overtaken the £31,461 annual median wage for full-time workers.
If only. I'm a mere... I'm at the coalface every day chipping away while those above us carry on.
It's time to hand some of it back, isn't it? You know, Rishi Sunak's got you in his sights.
Well, given the cost of the pandemic, there's no doubt we are talking about fiscal constraints. And that debate certainly get louder, I think, as the year goes on. I don't think it's a debate that we'll be hearing too much about in the first 6 months of this year as they try to assure the recovery. Beyond that, it's going to be important, though, the UK Chancellor yesterday making available another £4.6 billion of emergency aid. This is to help companies cope with tighter restrictions that see schools and non-essential shops closed until at least the middle of February. Treasury estimates the money will boost 600,000 businesses, includes a grant of £9,000 for retail, hospitality and leisure businesses that have been forced to close. Remember, the furlough program and money for self-employed will continue through, to the end of April. The loan programme closes to new entrances at the end of March. The latest measures add to the £280 billion it's cost the UK Treasury to tackle the virus and support firms and workers through the pandemic. Unmatched rise in peacetime borrowing. UK debt has surged to around about 100% of GDP. And as you say, no doubt, the nation's finances will need to be put back onto a sustainable path at some point.
This would be music to the ears of John Maynard Keynes, wouldn't it?
Potentially. He'll be, I don't know if he envisaged such a crisis playing out, but clearly it plays right into that arc.
Okay, who's going to pay it back?
You. Well, the country, the nation, everyone, to be honest with you.
Mansion tax.
Wealth tax coming through at some point, one would suspect. Lots of different things being muted, but as I say, not something that we'll see probably really come into force during the course of this year.
That's dangerous ground for a Tory government, isn't it?
Potentially so, and you know, they would they don't like to raise taxes, and the electoral cycle, of course, will come into play at some point on that, although we're some way off the next election. No doubt politicians will be thinking about that.
Okay, let's move on to Georgia and the markets in particular. I mean, S&P futures down this morning. Signs are that the Democrats are going to win both those seats. So one of them's already been called. They've stopped counting the other one for the night. But the markets won't like that because it means increased regulation if Democrats gain control of the House.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Certainly, investors have been monitoring a number of things, COVID figures, OPEC Plus meeting, but also the US Senate runoff election in Georgia. Democrat Warnock has apparently won the Senate race there. Well, that's according to ABC and NBC this morning. As you say, the other seat looking very tight. Potentially, that blue wave will actually emerge that will see the Democrats control Congress. What would that mean? Well, I suppose you could be talking about more aggressive tax hikes. You could be talking about increased regulatory pressure on technology companies and a larger stimulus package as well. The market potentially could be wary of that because it may lead to upward pressure on inflation and potentially higher interest rates, of course, along with those higher taxes we've been talking about to pay for the fiscal aid. So markets monitoring that situation so far. Hard actually to gauge what it means because a more aggressive stimulus package, at least in the short term, would be positive for the US economy and for companies. So if you look at markets, saw the S&P 500 up 0.7% at the close yesterday. NASDAQ was up 1%. European equities futures have got stronger as the morning's gone on, actually. Now calling the FTSE up 62 points. Dover and Frankfurt up 36 points. CAC in Paris up 107 points. And actually, the economic data was pretty good from the US. We should mention that yesterday. ISM survey showed US manufacturing activity rose to its highest level in 2.5 years in December. Remember, manufacturing accounts about 12% of the US economy. Seeing strong demand for goods, particularly as services struggle with the lockdown. So you're seeing strong demand for electronics, for home improvement products, and for exercise equipment.
Not for cars, though. UK car sales down 29% last year.
Yeah, no real surprise of that. The disruption we've been seeing as a result of the pandemic, showrooms have been closed for considerable periods of time over the course of the past year. Alongside that, people are not commuting into work, so the need for a car perhaps has been reduced as many people have worked from home. So truly a dismal year for the UK car industry, and something that we've seen, of course, in other markets around the world.
There's going to be some bargains out there, isn't there? And, you know, I can feel a few bargains coming along.
You like the idea of that, don't you? You're in the market for a new little vehicle?
Well, no, but I mean, I keep thinking to myself, they've got to get rid of the stock, so they're going to have to start giving them away at some point.
Well, you should also remember production levels have also been impeded by the pandemic as well. So you'd normally expect that level of demand decrease to result in a huge amount of stock, but actually, I think factories were closed for considerable periods. There's also been disruption to supply chain. So your theory that there's a huge amount of cars out there that's going to be sold off very cheap may not exactly be true.
Guy, you always have to rain on my parade, don't you?
Well,
really?
I'm sorry.
Just because you've earned more money this year so far than the average worker does in a year.
Come on, you're really pushing this now.
Okay, let's have a look at OPEC Plus and the resulting effects on the price of oil, which has been ticking up over the last few days.
It has. OPEC Plus reached an agreement to curb supply next month, with Saudi Arabia carrying a greater burden of the oil output cuts. In fact, most of it, the kingdom will make an extra 1 million barrel per day cut, with most holding steady. Russia and actually Kazakhstan will be allowed to boost output in February by a combined 75,000 barrels per day, which is actually a relatively small increase for two of the largest non-OPEC producers in the alliance. The proposal does mean that the global market will get less supply in February than most traders have been predicting. Markets have been reacting to that. Crude prices jumped 5%, trading at the highest level in 10 months. Brent trading above $53 a barrel this morning.
Okay, can we have a quick word about the euro? I've just finished reading a fascinating book by Stephen Wall, who is advisor to several British prime ministers and also a top diplomat in the EU, called Reluctant European, which sort of traces Britain's history in the European back to when Edward Heath took us in 1973.
That's a statement of a book, I'd say, Reluctant European.
Yeah, it's a very, very good book, actually. It's well worth a read. But is the jury still out on the euro? Because, of course, successive British governments sort of failed to sign up for the single currency, even though Tony Blair got quite close at one point. But, you know, what after 20 years is the future of the euro, do you think?
Well, you could argue, actually, the pandemic has, if anything, strengthened the European project. The most important element of that has been the European Recovery Fund, which has been agreed and, for the first time, mutualises debt. So what we've seen, of course, is monetary union without fiscal union in the past, and that has been one of the key weaknesses of the single currency. The fact that we've started to move towards that reduces the fragmentation risk, I think, within the eurozone and creates a stronger collective body. So you could argue, actually, the pandemic has encouraged the European governments to work in a more cooperative fashion, and that, if anything, has been positive for the European project. Now, what does that mean in terms of the euro? Well, the recovery in the eurozone, I think, is likely to remain very weak. You've got negative interest rates, of course, in the eurozone. They're likely to stay there for a considerable period of time. So you talk about negative interest rates, a weaker recovery doesn't suggest that it's going to be a good year for the euro.
This is still the problem, isn't it? You know, you've got different economies working at different speeds, and harmonising interest rates across the eurozone is not the easiest thing to do.
It was always going to be a fundamental problem. The question is, does the benefits outweigh the potential weaknesses of that? And you could also argue that, certain countries, Germany, for example, have had a much lower interest rate than was probably deserved, and have they benefited from that potentially? But you can also argue that European countries have been able to borrow money and so forth as being part of Europe, and that's helped demand within Europe across the board that wouldn't have been there without the guarantees of the European project.
One of the fascinating things in Stephen Wall's book was the complete animosity between Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. I mean, Blair used to send notes to the Treasury and they didn't reply.
Yes, it was one of the more fractious relationships at the top of government that's been I don't think it's been fully unveiled yet. I think we sort of hear snippets over time that really cast a light exactly how dark it was during some of those fractious meetings.
I think Blair, as I said, was very keen to sort of get into the single currency, but so Gordon Brown basically put it up against the buffers and said no.
but it probably turned out to be the right move if you see where the UK is today.
Well, the referendum never would have happened if Britain had actually been in the single currency, would it?
Certainly not, one would suspect, but I mean, it would have taken a lot to get us to that point, it has to be
the five tests of economic convergence.
Yes. We were a long way from that, weren't we, on many of those.
All right, foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 1.36, euro dollar coming in at 1.23, you're going to get 1 euro, 10.5 cents for your British pound this morning.
Right, enjoy spending all your loot.
Thank you, sir, have a good day.
Speak to you tomorrow, Hank Potts and Barclays.